Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guests today are Betsy Carlson, the Citizen Science Coordinator at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, and Michael Sedell, AmeriCorps member and Citizen Science Educator at the Science Center. We'll be talking a lot about the ongoing citizen science effort to understand and monitor the intertidal habitats, specifically along Kinsey Beach near Point Wilson and the beach out at Cape George. So welcome, Betsy and Michael.
Hey, Nan.
Hello.
And I've got to let listeners know, Betsy brought me a present. She often brings presents of interesting things. And this is two photos of the same female elephant seal. The first one found
at Beckett Point in Discovery Bay in April
of
this year.
And boy, she's all just chewed up. She's got gashes and big marks out of her flesh, and she looks really sad. Did you have much hope for her?
We weren't sure she was going to make it, and those wounds were inflicted by another elephant seal. This is not human cause. This one's probably from another elephant seal.
And then
probably a male.
The second picture.
This is like a week and a half ago.
So like 2 months-ish.
Mm-hmm. From April to July.
It's so exciting because you can see, first of all, she's still alive, but you can see the healing, and you can see where she's forming scar tissue on those wounds. Kind of go, wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderfully hopeful. I just think, wow, how cool. So before we get to talking about citizen science, though, we do want to listen to this week's mystery sound. And a quick note, this is a field recording. It was actually taken by the folks at Port Townsend Marine Science Center, but you will hear the noise of the wind in the microphone. The mystery sound is that grinding or crackling noise. So do you want a hint? Some of you out there probably know. You can hear these creatures if you stop and listen close to the waterline on an ordinary low tide. We'll be back later with the revelation of the mystery sound.
And now for some observations and news. We have to pass on the distressing news that was released last week. Over the last 50 years, that is within my lifetime, North America has lost more than one quarter of its birds, over 3 billion birds, according to the recent study published in Science, the world's leading journal of scientific news. The declines are due to varying causes, all of which are the result of human activity. The loss of bird populations of this magnitude is nothing short of catastrophic. The study published by a joint team of conservation biologists marks the first time experts have tried to estimate the sheer number of avian losses in the Western Hemisphere. By zooming out rather than focusing on one particular habitat, they showed that even the common birds we love are disappearing in astounding numbers. You can learn more by going to the National Audubon Society website.
A small bit of good news. The southern resident orcas, which were absent for much of the past few months, have recently visited local waters. Last Thursday, members of the J and K pod orcas, including the newest baby born to the endangered southern residents, were spotted near the south end of Whidbey Island. The whales sky-hopped and leapt, looking playful and sleek. As always, lucky observers of their puff and blow were able to experience a rather primal, powerful sound and vision like something from the beginning of time. It was a rare visit this year, as the orcas have been spending most of their time on the outer coast of Washington. And on the outer coast of Washington, the federal government has recently proposed expanding the whale's critical habitat.
Mark Sato's Salish Sea News recently reported that the state of Washington's long-awaited conservation strategy for mysterious marbled murrelet is now moving forward. For more than 20 years, mysteries surrounding an endangered seabird suspended logging activities on about 170,000 acres of state trust lands in Washington. Now the State Department of Natural Resources says it has learned enough about the marbled murrelet to protect its habitat and to free up some of the lands that were previously tied up. The agency released the final environmental impact statement, for a long-term conservation plan last Friday. Consult the Washington Department of Natural Resources website for details on the environmental impact statement and upcoming public meetings.
And I have one last thing to share. This past weekend at the Port Townsend Film Festival, I had the privilege to view a short film by Tracy Rector titled, in English, Changer's Land. The Coast Salish title is much more poetic, but do forgive me, I am not wanting to mispronounce it horribly as I'm sure I would. This was a 5-minute short. It offered beautiful black and white imagery as the Coast Salish people sang an honoring song with drums to celebrate the ocean, the mountains, and the creatures of the Salish Sea, and the hope that the land will endure despite human incursions of power plants, highways, and other assaults of modern society. I found it actually very intentful and almost meditative, and I would encourage anybody to check it out of the Port Townsend Film Festival Library. So now let's go on to talking about citizen science and the Marine Science Center's project with intertidal monitoring. And Betsy was on the show, well, I don't know, a while ago, and we talked about citizen science. But so just real quickly, what is citizen science and why is it science?
Well, it's citizen science because anybody can do it. Anybody can get involved.
You don't have to be a scientist.
And you can be a scientist, but in a different field if you want to get involved. And it's science because we follow a set protocol, and the methods that we use can be repeated and they can be statistically analyzed. And so we are collecting information that is useful to science.
In a scientific way. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the intertidal monitoring project you folks are doing. Briefly, just give me, what is it and what are you hoping to find out?
Yeah, so the intertidal monitoring project that we're doing, we have a few main goals. The overall goal is to establish some baseline data to get a general sense of what is out in the intertidal zone. We look at a few different things. Main thing we look at is species distribution and biodiversity. What things live out there and their relative abundances, how many of those things are out there. We also look at the beach elevation. We take a profile of the beach to see how that slope is, and we look at the substrate to see what actually composes the beach.
So like sand or mud or rocky
sand,
or boulder or whatever.
Yeah, what kind of size, different kinds of sediment you see out there. And we follow a protocol that's been established by other sites and organizations that also do intertidal monitoring.
So that means you could compare things at many different sites if you're following the same protocol.
Yeah. When we got involved with doing intertidal monitoring because of our relationship and projects that we've been doing with the Protection Island Aquatic Reserve. So our first site was at Cape George. We did that last year and we just did it again this year because at that particular area, we're within the waters of the aquatic reserve. Mm-hmm. And there are other aquatic reserves that are also doing intertidal monitoring. Cherry Point, Fidalgo Bay, Maury Island, I think Nisqually. I'm not sure if they've started or not. So at the end of the day, we should be able to compare what we found from site to site.
And are you seeing differences between the two sites?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Even just between Cape George and Kinsey Beach, which are the sites that we did this year. Just here. I mean, those are two very different sites.
So give me a couple examples.
One of the things we do is we look at what species are present. We have a long list that's been provided to us by like Cherry Point and Fidalgo Bay. Mm-hmm. They have their own species list that they go out and look for. So we used theirs and we brought that out to Kinsey Beach. And we just did our very first survey at Kinsey Beach the beginning of last June. Mm-hmm. We have a section at the end where you can fill in other species or species that weren't currently on the list. And there were a significant amount of species that appeared at Kinsey Beach that had not appeared at all at places like Cherry Point and Fidalgo Bay. Mostly species of brown algae. You were there and you noticed
there was tons
of brown algae, like feather boa kelp, bull kelp, giant kelp, all different kinds way down in the lower part of the intertidal.
I was fortunate enough to go along and take notes for one of the naturalists. Tell us about like just a typical day. What are you doing and what happens when you do one of these monitoring things?
The standard setup is a swath. And if you just imagine a section that goes from the high tide area, above a high tide, all the way out into the lowest tide of the day, and that's the swath at 66 feet wide. And then we go from our zero point, which is as high up on the beach as we can get, all the way down to mm-hmm. minus one tide and
so
a little
bit below. So
that
could cover quite a distance.
It really mm-hmm. depends on the slope of
yeah.
the beach.
Yeah. yeah.
And Kinsey was pretty big mm-hmm. because it's a fairly gentle slope, so
right.
the tide keeps going out.
Yeah. Yeah, we had about 330 feet long for that one, which is...
So your swath is 66 feet wide mm-hmm. and at Kinsey, 330 feet
yes, about, yeah.
long.
Yeah.
That's a big...
That's a big area.
Big area.
And it's a lot of kelp to go through.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's the area. Now what?
We set up that area and then three different things happen in that area. We measure the profile of the beach so we get a sense of the mm-hmm. slope and the substrate, what's there. We also have teams of naturalists with a scribe. That's what you did.
That's what I did.
That's
yep.
what you did. So you work with a naturalist who goes through and throughout the whole area, and it's divided in sections, but identifying every different species you can find within that area. So we get a presence absence list
okay.
of species there. And then we have randomly selected quadrats that we go through and we look at the percent cover more carefully to get a sense of the concentration of organisms within these quadrats. In each quadrat, it's a half a meter by a half a meter. We look at the cover. If it's seaweed covered, we'll write down the percentage of cover. Then we'll remove that seaweed and we'll look and see what's under the next layer. We estimate the coverage of specific organisms like anemones and barnacles and things that tend to be more mm-hmm. abundant, and we'll count individual things, but it's done in a very kind of lumping. We'll lump all the amphipods and isopods and clams mm-hmm. are kind of lumped together, but it just gives us a sense of, you know, while the naturalists are out there with the swath counting every single, saying
so that's
all
the whole diversity, like mm-hmm. what's
right.
out there,
the quadrats give us a sense of the coverage, like how dense is what's out there.
Okay, tell me again right. how big a quadrat is.
It's a half a meter by a half a meter.
Okay, so that's a relatively small square. That's a relatively small thing in a really large
right,
swath.
So we do 12 of those quadrats.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And one at a plus one tide, a zero tide, and a minus one tide. So we do four at each of those
okay.
levels. And those are called the transects.
Okay.
And that kind of gives us an idea of how the percent coverage is and abundances of certain things vary between the different tidal heights.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at that data already, they do vary. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why it's important to look at all
the
different ones.
More yeah. eelgrass in the lower levels and, you know, at the minus
yeah.
tides which than we would at the plus tides.
Which you kind of expect. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little lesson in biology. Intertidal zones.
Yes.
I think we all sort of intuitively know if we've walked on the beach that you see different things at the high intertidal and mid and low intertidal. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
So the intertidal zone, to just give a definition, it's the area of the shore that part of the day is exposed to the air when the
right.
tide has gone out, and for the other part of the day is covered when the tide comes in. It's really interesting because you've got this area in which all the creatures have to be adapted to deal with very different and very extreme kinds of environments.
Like being covered by salt water is a whole lot different than
being
exposed
to air.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
heat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Especially when it's sunny.
These are tough organisms.
Yeah. A lot of them are very resilient. Now, of course, they can't be out of the water forever.
Sure.
They're not adapted for that. They do have to live underwater, but they can spend however many hours it takes for them.
Which
you
is
know.
Pretty remarkable to think mm-hmm. what a creature has to do to adapt to that.
A barnacle, for example, you know, when it's covered with water, opens up and uses its feet to filter feed
right.
and bring its mm-hmm. food back in. And then when the water goes out and it closes back up,
it's tight as a ship.
Tight as a ship, and it's really protected from whatever comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wave action, other creatures that might eat them.
Yeah. Well, and the different species of anemones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anemones can get quite different. I mean, normally when you think of anemones, you see all the tentacles circling that ring.
Right,
stock.
And it's sort of squishy and...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when they're, you know, exposed to air, they essentially retract. And when you're out there looking at them, they kind of look like little squishy round blobs with a little hole in the center.
Mm-hmm.
All their tentacles and everything is just totally kept inside, and it's just to help the water stay in their bodies. They don't want to dry out.
Sure.
Just reducing that surface area really helps them stay up exposed.
There are some animals that will intentionally cover their bodies with other materials, like caddisfly larvae, for example.
Sea urchins. Well, sea urchins do it. Some of the sea urchins do. Yeah.
They don't really have much dexterity.
Except in their tentacles, right?
So you've done
Kinsey Beach this summer in June, right? And Cape George.
Just last week.
July 16th.
So are you going to do another monitoring project this summer, or is it just one each for the summer?
That's it for this year. I would like to perhaps do one on Diamond Point in the Miller Peninsula.
Oh, interesting. In the future.
So if anybody out there listening has access to an interesting place that we could do a survey next summer, I'd like to find out about that. But at this point, we're just doing Kinsey Beach and Cape George.
So are there anything that surprised you on these monitoring projects this summer?
There was the amount of brown algae that we found out at Kinsey Beach was new to any of the other intertidal monitoring projects that have been done, you know, related to the one that we're doing.
Do scientists have any thought?
It's the substrate mostly in that it's a very rocky substrate. And kelp likes to be on
that.
So that's not that. There's no great surprises, but then, you know, part of the purpose of doing these intertidal monitoring projects is so we get a sense of what the baseline is. We won't know. It'll be really, it's hard to compare and look for any subtle changes in the populations and what's there. God forbid if there's ever a oil spill, we would know what should
be. So that's the reason for doing a baseline.
That's part of the reason. That's one of the reasons,
So I've got like two more questions. The first one is, did you find anything really cool?
We always find really cool.
You know what's amazing is you pull back that top layer of ulva or the sea lettuce and you start looking underneath and how many different organisms there are. And Kinsey Beach, we found this tiny, tiny little sea star.
I remember seeing that.
It's like the size
of a teeny.
Half of the size of your little fingernail. The fact that that naturalist even found it was remarkable. So maybe not big surprises, but tons
of
little.
But that's part of the, you know, the more you look, the more time you spend, the more closely. It's amazing what you can see.
And there's always tons of great things that we find. We actually did bring a list with us of all of the different species that were observed at Cape George the last year's survey, not the ones this year. And we have roughly about 90 different observed species.
Wow.
And that's just within that area. So Cape George is actually a bit of a smaller survey area than Kinsey Beach. It only goes about 180 feet long compared to the 330 feet. It's still 66 feet wide. That's just because of the slope
of the beach.
But so even within that small area, if you know what you're looking at, you can find 90 to maybe 100 different species of just living things.
That amount of diversity is amazing.
Well, and the kinds of nudibranchs that you get to see. Yeah. I mean, nudibranchs are always fun.
So the last kind of set of questions is about if anybody's listening who is intrigued by citizen science projects or this intertidal monitoring projects, can they be a part of it?
Absolutely.
And what do they need to do?
So you need to take a look at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website and learn there about some of the projects that we have done in the past, we are currently doing. Sign up as a volunteer. We have volunteer orientations a few times a year, and we do.
And everybody gets training to do it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And then depending on our project and availability, because we have some projects but we don't need volunteers, and then we have other projects that we do, and we have projects that you need to be committed to do monthly, and we have projects that happen once a year. So there's something for everybody.
Lots of different kinds. It's been great. This is Betsy Carlson and Michael Sedell from the Science Center, and now we're to the point of the program where we need to reveal the mystery sound. So let's hear that sound again. Well, Betsy, I think actually sort of set the stage for revealing this critter. Imagine spending your life standing on your head and capturing your food with your feet and feeding yourself with your feet. Well, that's a barnacle. Those were barnacle sounds. They're makers of that sound. They spend most of their lives, as certainly as adults, standing on their heads and feeding with their feet. And the sound is from a combination of the animal moving around inside its house and kind of rubbing those little plates that close it up kind of a little bit together. It's a pretty subtle sound. and you have to stop and listen. Would you describe it another way, or am I doing this okay?
Yeah, it sounds about right. I never think about listening to barnacles that much, but if you put your ears next to them, I'd say, you know, at a low tide when they're exposed, you can definitely hear
you
something.
You can hear it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's this kind of like shining in the background. So, and just a quick note about barnacles, of course, is that they are crustaceans. They're related to lobsters and crabs and shrimp. And when they're tiny in their larval stage, they float around as members of the zooplankton, and then they find themselves a suitable site. They kind of test it out with their antennae. And then another cool thing about barnacles that just intrigues the heck out of me is they cement themselves sort of a little plate and then head first down on that plate. And that cement is amazingly powerful. That's because, you know, you can see a rock that has housed a bunch of barnacles and the barnacles have died and those houses have been wiped off. But you still see the bottom plate that is still firmly glued to that rock. It's pretty amazing. We've had a great time. Thank you so much, Betsy and Michael.
And now for some events. On Thursday, September 26th, during the morning, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is sponsoring a field trip to a number of birding hotspots near Point No Point. Saltwater marsh and shoreline bird species will be the focus of this field trip. Parasitic Jaeger and Bonaparte's gulls are among the target species. Check the Olympic Peninsula Audubon website for details.
Also on Thursday, September 26th, you can help celebrate the Jefferson Land Trust 30th anniversary by attending a party at the old alcohol plant. There will be light refreshments and cake. Toast past accomplishments and help the Jefferson Land Trust envision the future of community conservation. For more information about this free event, go to the Jefferson Land Trust website. It's www.saveland.org.
On Saturday, September 28th, you join the Friends of Fort Worden to help complete the widening of Chinese Gardens Trail for the Future Interpretive Trail Project and pull scotch broom and spurge laurel in the Chinese Gardens area. Coffee and snacks will be provided for this work party and community service event. Meet at 9:15 a.m. at the North Beach County Park parking lot.
Later, in the evening of Saturday, September the 28th, look skyward to observe Venus climbing into view in the evening sky. The planet is very low in the west at sunset and then sets well before twilight fades. It is the brightest object in the sky other than the sun and the moon.
On Sunday, September 29th, the Admiralty Audubon is hosting their first work party of the season to pull invasives and clean up the paths around the Cotai Lagoon. Meet at 9 a.m. at the Benedict Street entrance to Cotai. Tools and refreshments will be provided, but please bring your own work gloves. Check the Admiralty Audubon website for details.
So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. And my thanks to our steadfast editing crew. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow, that's one word, naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, Thursdays at 5:05 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. This week's ending music is a May 1930 recording of Barnacle Bill the Sailor by Hoagy Carmichael and his orchestra, featuring Bix Beiderbecke on cornet, Tommy Dorsey on trombone, Benny Goodman on clarinet, Gene Krupa on drums, and many other legends of the big band sound.
Knocking at my door. Who's that knocking at my door? From over the sea.
Barnacle Bill, the sailor.
I'm all lit up like a Christmas tree.
Barnacle Bill, the sailor.
I'll sail the seas until I croak. I'll fight and swear and drink and smoke, but I can't swim a bloody stroke.
Barnacle Bill, the sailor.